Welcome to Commons and Chronicles, the podcast where we talk about all the best Creative Commons and reusable open game license content. If you need resources for your creative writing, game design, or you just love lore, Commons and Chronicles is for you. Let's talk some more about Conan the Barbarian. In the previous Conan episode, I covered Stygia. Stygia's kind of nice because, well, it's properly evil, but it's nice because there's not a whole lot of spoilery bits in it. I mean, you learn, I think, if you look closely at Stygia about some of the villains you'll encounter in the Conan books, but you don't really get any kind of big reveals. Well, except that there are vampires there. But if you weren't expecting there to be supernatural creatures throughout the land of Conan the Barbarian, then I don't know what to tell you about spoilers. This episode, we're going to cover Aquilonia. And Aquilonia, again, there's not a whole lot of spoilers, but there are some fairly, I guess, significant plot points that I kind of have to reveal as I'm talking about Aquilonia. If you have not read all Conan stories and want every little detail to be a surprise, then don't listen to this episode yet. That said, probably you'll either run into the minor, tiny little spoilers that I'm going to reveal just by researching what book to read next. I mean, it's basically stuff that you would find on the back of the book cover were you browsing in a bookstore. So these are very, very minor and vague spoilers, if you want to even call them that. But there's fair warning that I'm going to give a couple of things away that you wouldn't know if you knew nothing about Conan the Barbarian. But this is back of the book stuff. Okay, so Aquilonia. It's a great western kingdom. A long time ago, the Aquilonians, the people from this region, invaded Samaria, which is in the far north, but were driven back across the marches by the barbarians and have never since tried to colonize the Sumerian country. Now, ironically, Conan the Sumerian, or as you probably know him, Conan the Barbarian, eventually becomes the king of Aquilonia later in his life. And that's the spoiler that I was trying to warn you about. It's not that big of a deal. You don't actually see him become the king. It's something that you hear about, and you hear about how he became king, but when the book starts, he's already king, so it's really not that much of a spoiler. Aquilonia, roughly, in the world of Conan, is situated sort of, it's difficult to map this stuff out because a map doesn't actually exist that I know of, you know, that Robert E. Howard drew or anything, but from his description, Aquilonia lies beneath the Gunderlands, which is in turn beneath the far north of Sumeria. I'm not saying Sumeria, by the way. I'm saying Cimmeria. 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 So the Cimmeria are the frosty wastelands. And then under that is the Gunderlands. And then roughly under that, and there may be things sprinkled, you know, between these major borders. But regionally speaking, below that is Aquilonia. Then to the west of Aquilonia are the Bossonian Marches, or the Bossonians. And then south of Aquilonia are the Poitain mountain ranges, and below that is Zingara, and then below that is Koth. And we'll learn all about all of those regions on this very show, but that's just to give you an idea of where Aquilonia exists. And that is to say that Aquilonia is kind of in the middle of everything. It's very much in the thick of a lot of different regions, lots of different political interests in and around Aquilonia, especially because the borders, of course, of all these places are almost constantly shifting. So it's not necessarily a hotbed of political unrest, but it's a key area. It's a region that people wouldn't mind having, for instance, or wouldn't mind having control over or interests in. So it's an exciting place to live. Around Aquilonia, there is the Valley of Valkia. It's a valley 10 miles west of the border between Numidia, another kingdom, and Aquilonia. It's the site of a great battle that, I will say, apparently killed some major characters. Whether it does or not, and who those characters are, you will have to find out by reading the book. But it's kind of a battle site. If you were going on tour of Aquilonia, or the region between Nemedia and Aquilonia, you might visit this place and read memorial postings about the great battle that occurred there. Sort of south and east of Aquilonia is a river called the Korotas, Khorotas. It's a river that swings eastward around Aquilonia, skirting the Poitanian Mountains. And as I said, Poitain is a mountainous region south of Aquilonia, or rather, on the south end of the Aquilonian kingdom, really. It is indicated that Aquilonia sort of officially claims the Poitanian Mountains. It is also the home to some very important nobles of Aquilonia. One is named Trocero, that's T-R-O-C-E-R-O, and the other Prospero, P-R-O-S-P-E-R-O. They're both Conan loyalists. When politics get confused, they stick with Conan. And the mountains themselves are mostly uninhabited, save by outlaws and garrisons of soldiers who guard the passes. But sprinkled throughout the mountains are Poitanians, people who live in the region, but they tend to live a life of luxury, refraining from too much manual labor. And that's why a couple of counts of Aquilonia take up residence there, because it's known for its relaxed way of life. And it's up in the mountains, and if you go into certain places, I think it can be assumed that you're too far for people to really bother you. And there are garrisons, as I say, garrisons of soldiers who guard all the major passes through the mountain range. South of the Poitanian Mountains are rich and beautiful plains of Poitain, stretching to the river Alamein, A-L-I-M-A-N-E. Beyond that river, the river Alamein, lays the land of Zingara. Zingara is not super important in the original books, but it gets mentioned here and there, so I'll probably do an episode maybe either on it and Koth together, or maybe just it. We'll see how much material I have. Poitain itself, that region, is mentioned as the home to dark-haired girls, because Robert E. Howard and Conan, I guess by extension, often referred to regions basically by what the women in that region look like. So a couple of important civilizations or cities in the Aquilonian kingdom. One would be Tarantia. Tarantia is a city near the border of, again, Nemedia and Aquilonia. It's within the Aquilonian border officially, but when some political unrest occurs in the region, it comes under the occupation of a guy named Valerius. Valerius, let it just be said, is a traitor. He's a kind of a political rogue, and he gets a lot of support for him, for his own right to really the throne of Aquilonia. So he occupies Tarantia, making it become a kind of a suddenly very important city. I mean, it was already important because it is near the border, and those border towns obviously tend to be pretty significant. There's a famous iron tower there in Tarantia, and the bell on that citadel of the tower tolls at midnight, or, if not at midnight, at the hour of the king's death. If those two things coincide, I'm not sure what it does. It didn't say. Another important town in Aquilonia is Fort Tusculan. It's just how it sounds, T-U-S-C-E-L-A-N, Fort Tusculan. It's an outpost near Thunder River and Scalp Creek and the Black River. In part, it's a jungle region, but near the Bossonian marches, there's potential farmland. So this is on the western side of Aquilonia, near the Bossonian marches. Much of this region around Fort Tusculan historically has been owned by land barons, and it is kind of a symbol of, I guess, what you would call progress, meaning that the civilized world, or the Hyborians, were pushing into closer and closer into Pictish land to expand their own civilization. The Picts, P-I-C-T, the Picts are a savage culture of people who who are the sort of the raw threat of well, chaos, really, kind of surrounding the civilized world. Now, the Picts weren't always savage and chaotic. They at one point used to be a very important and dominating force in this world, but that was before the Great Cataclysm, and they have since fallen into really just barbarism. Although, to be clear, they're not called barbarians. That's a term reserved for the northern folk. But this region of the Bossonian March and Pictish borderlands, it's considered sort of a frontier where chaos still reigns in shadowy forests, and people live in brush thatched huts that with grinning skulls hanging from the roofs, and mud walled enclosures where fires flicker and drums rumble, spears are whetted in the hands of silent men with tangled hair and the eyes of serpents. Those eyes often glare through bushes at the fort across the river. So there's tension, palpable tension, because where Fort Tusculan stands now, the Picts themselves used to dwell. And make no mistake, there's no pretense in the Conan world, in the Hyborian Age, that the Picts, these forces of chaos, are at fault by any means. It's much more analytical than that, actually. It's that the Picts are remnants of a once great civilization that now sort of live off the land and really need to defend their land against the encroaching Hyborians. There's not really a whole lot of judgment, except that civilization, I guess, typically is deemed as maybe inevitable. I was going to say preferable, but I think it's more like an inevitability, and the Picts are therefore the force against the inevitable. And in that sense, they're seen as maybe a little bit evil, but I think chaos really sums it up a lot better. Now, early on, when the progress was happening, and there's a pretty good account of this in the Hyborian Age essay that Robert E. Howard published, the traders, of course, came to the land, as they always do, but with them came the priesthood, and this priesthood was of the god Mitra. Mitra is a very popular god in the Conan world. He's the sort of the default religion, really. He is a good god, but he's also, I guess you could say, jealous. He's a jealous god. He's a god who moves into a region and rather demands obedience from people and kind of tends to encourage, let's say, the denial of all other gods. Meaning, if you follow Mitra, and this is just an impression that I get from the text, you are meant to disbelieve that other gods exist, but not necessarily, because that's hardcore monotheism, and it's never really spelled out in at least the original texts. So I don't know for sure that Mitra is a monotheistic sort of insistence, but there is definitely the impression that this is a god who expects full devotion. So even if you do believe in other gods, then you are to believe that Mitra is above all those other gods. Now, what you get for that is a very peaceful, at least on the surface, a peaceful god who doesn't insist on immediate punishment and that sort of thing. In fact, there is a scene in one of the books where a woman becomes a convert to the religion of Mitra from her native Ishtar, her cult of Ishtar, and she's quite... She approaches Mitra initially very fearfully and kind of sort of expecting the worst, and she finds that there's really not a whole lot of it's not a very demanding religion. You just kind of you speak your mind and you speak honestly, and that's fine. You don't have to do anything special. There aren't any grandiose rituals or sacrifices that you have to make. So she seems... The impression from the book is that it's that she sees it as surprisingly non-threatening. Then again, there are other accounts, so I'll read this from the Hyborian Age essay by Robert E. Howard, which is the fictional history book for this region. So he says, "But the Picts were growing amazingly in population and power. By a strange twist of fate, it was largely due to the efforts of one man, and he an alien, that they set their feet upon the ways that led to eventual empire. This man was Arus, a Numidian priest, a natural-born reformer. What turned his mind toward the Picts is not certain, but this much is history. He determined to go into the western wilderness and modify the rude ways of the heathen by the introduction of the gentle worship of Mitra. He was not daunted by the grisly tales of what had happened to traders and explorers before him, and by some whim of fate, he came among the people he sought alone and unarmed, and was not instantly speared. The Picts had benefited by contact with Hyborian civilization, but they had always fiercely resisted that contact. That is to say, they had learned to work crudely in copper and tin, which were found scantily in their country, and for which latter metal they raided into the mountains of Zingara, or traded hides, whale's teeth, walrus tusks, and such things as savages have to trade. They no longer lived in caves and tree shelters, but built tents of hides and crude huts, copied from those of the Bossonians. They still lived mainly by the chase, since their wilds swarmed with game of all sorts, and the rivers and the sea and fish, and they had learned how to plant grain, which they did sketchily, preferring to steal it from the neighbors, the Bossonians and Zingarans. They dwelt in clans, which were generally at feud with each other, and their simple customs were bloodthirsty and utterly inexplicable to a civilized man such as Arus of Numidia. They had no direct contact with the Hyborians, since the Bossonians acted as a buffer between them. But Arus maintained that they were capable of progress, and events proved the truth of his assertion, though scarcely in the way he meant it. The story goes on, and it turns out that Arus of Numidia sort of accidentally teaches the Picts how to make weapons, and then he accidentally teaches them how to invade the neighboring civilizations, and the Picts kind of, they level up, really, in their civilization. And when I say he accidentally taught them, I do mean that. He essentially uses civilization as evidence of Mitra's great power. He says, look at Aquilonia, look at Numidia. There are these great civilizations compared to what you guys have, and this is all because Mitra has blessed them. And so the Picts kind of, they go on board with this. They say, okay, well, let's hook up with Mitra then, and we'll learn the ways of civilization. And they do. They learn how to make weapons and how to form armies, and then they start invading places. And that results in some fun, really mixing of cultures as a result. So all that is to say that Aquilonia and the Bossonian marches and the Picts, that's the hotbed of a lot of tension, and it's a great little area if you need kind of a borderland town on the, you know, the last vestige against encroaching chaos. Then that's not a horrible place to place an adventure or a story. Although, how you feel about the Picts and their plight, I mean, there are a lot of different angles you could take on that. You can use them as just chaotic evil encroaching to destroy civilization, or you can look at them as someone who's been wronged by the lawful evil that I think you could argue civilization represents. Mitra, though, doesn't really have an interest in this conflict, necessarily. Mitra, the god, is a god, and he's a very popular god because he does have priests who roam the land telling everyone about Mitra and that they should start worshipping Mitra. There's no indication that there's any kind of inquisition or imposition of Mitra, of faith in Mitra on other civilizations or other cultures. It's simply that Mitra has a very good advertising campaign, and people tend to like Mitra. He seems to be a pretty relaxed kind of guy, and he's easy to worship. Strangely, though, he's not as fun as some of the other gods, who we'll talk about in other episodes. There are some gods who sound a lot more fun to worship. There are some who sound a lot more terrible as well, so I guess it probably just kind of depends on the angle that you're coming from, but it's also, you know, how your god has impressed you or has let you down. So there are people who are worshiping quite happily some other god, and then because things aren't working out for them, they just play the field and switch over to Mitra. But Mitra is, again, very popular. Mitra has churches and followers in all of the major kingdoms, even in Stygia. So Mitra is everywhere in the Hyborian Age. If you're in a region and you need a generic, lawful, good god, Mitra is a surefire bet. Mitra will be there. There will be priests of Mitra there. There will be a church or a temple of Mitra. Never fails. It's a very, very popular religion. It is the primary religion of the Hyborian Age. Very popular. So, I mean, you might hear about Set worship. You might hear about Crom. You might hear about Ishtar or Asura. They don't compare. Mitra is everywhere. So those are the important cities. Tarantia in the east near Nemedia and Fort Tusculan in the west near the Pictish border and the Bassonian Marches. There's also in the same region near the Bassonian Marches is a city called Velitrium, Velitrium. It's not a whole lot of is known about it. It is simply in the same region as Fort Tusculan. I think it's across the Black River in relation to the fort. So a little bit more inland or away from removed from the dangerous border, I should say. Bassonians, of course, live on the borderlands of Aquilonia. They're the front line against Pict invaders. And there's also a region near the Bassonian Marches called the Conajohara, Conajohara. All I know about that region is that it is part of the border into Pictish lands. So let's talk factions. There's one important faction, I guess, and then another one that I don't really have a name on, but we'll talk about both of them. So the first one is the Black Legion. They're the royal guards of Aquilonia. They are led by the giant Grommel, Gromel. When they say giant, I have no reason to believe that they mean a very large giant. I think they simply mean sort of Andre the Giant type giant, like man size, but big, big man. So I don't get the feeling that he's the literal giant in the sense of a Dungeons and Dragons hill giant or frost giant or anything like that. I mean, I don't have evidence that he's not, but it never talks about his inability to fit through doorways or anything like that. So, but the Black Legion, they protect Aquilonia. Now, among the Black Legion are the Black Dragons. I'm not 100% sure about the hierarchy here. It could just be that the Black Legion and the Black Dragons are the same group with, two different names. You call them the Black Legion sometimes, you call them Black Dragons sometimes, I don't know. But the way that I've sort of sorted it out in my own head from like the one or two sentences in the books that talk about them is that the Black Legion is the greater, the Royal Guard, and then the Black Dragons are within the Royal Guard. And I think that they are the Royal Division of the Black Legion, in that the Black Dragons are Royal Guards specifically to the King. So that's why I kind of am assuming that when they said that they were the Black Dragons, they are also saying that they are part of the Black Legion, but they're just the guys who actually protect the king, personal guards of the king. So that's my assumption, and that's what I'll go with. The other faction, which is worth mentioning briefly, but I will save it really for the Zingara episode, because it is officially in the Zingaran, within the Zingaran borders, but arguably it takes place in the Poitanian Mountains, so I'm going to briefly mention it here. There is a Count Valbroso, with a castle perched high up in the mountains. And he leads regular bandit raids along the passes. And if he finds anyone with valuables, he takes them to his castle, possibly tortures them, and takes whatever they've got to offer. So Valbroso exists. He's got a little army that just serves him within his castle, goes out on raids with him. But they stick to their mountains. It doesn't specifically say what mountains those are. It is in Zingara. I get the impression it's Zingara side of the Poitanian mountain range. I could be wrong, though, so don't bank on that. But that's kind of my impression. So let's switch over to some people, because I think a world is you get a sort of an idea for some of these regions just by hearing names. So I'm going to throw a bunch of names out at you with a brief spoiler-free summary of what this person is known for. And some of these characters are very small characters, not very important in the larger scheme of things. Some are literally just mentioned in a sentence. But I always like to have sort of that glossary of names, of typical regional names. So Arpello, A-R-P-E-L-L-O, is a political upstart within Aquilonia. He believes himself to be the true heir to the throne. Now, you might also remember that I have already mentioned someone like that, and his name wasn't Arpello. And yes, indeed, it's true. There's another guy, Valerius, who also claims to be the rightful heir to the throne of Aquilonia. So it seems like they have problems with the lineage thing in Aquilonia. I'm not sure if they just don't have a system for it, or if they've haven't done a good job of asserting it. I'm not sure. There's a guy named Volmana, V-O-L-M-A-N-A. He's a dwarfish count of Caraban. He is a traitor, actually, and is even he's a would-be assassin of Conan the Barbarian. He attempts to assassinate Conan. He fails, but he tries, gives it a good go. On the opposite end of the height spectrum, we have Grommel, who I've already mentioned. He is a Bossonian, and he is the leader of the Black Legion. Dion, D-I-O-N, is a rather large baron of Attalus. And there's Rinaldo, a sort of a harebrained minstrel. He's very anti-Conan. So he's the literal bard of the party, really. But you don't really actually meet him, but you hear about him. And he has a song that he wrote called Lament for the King, which is a song about how Conan usurped the Aquilonian throne. So he likes to stir up trouble, this one. That's Rinaldo. There's Count Trocero of Poitain. He's the seneschal of Aquilonia. He's a Conan loyalist. There's Count Prospero, also of the Poitainian Mountains. He's the trusted advisor to Conan when Conan is king. Of course, as I say, Conan isn't always the king of Aquilonia. This is just at some point in his life. The short stories about Conan the Barbarian aren't necessarily, they're not very explicit as to when they're talking, you know, as to when they happen in Conan's life. And it is the exercise of very many Conan the Barbarian fans to try to put them all into actual chronological order, and then to fit the expanded universe into that chronological order. So it's kind of entertaining to watch people come up with their canonical reading of Conan's life. So at one point in his life, he becomes the king of Aquilonia, but of course he wasn't always the king of Aquilonia. He's not even Aquilonian. He doesn't live in Aquilonia. But another king of Aquilonia that we know of is Naumidides. It's either in A or in U. I think the ebook that I read kind of vacillated between those two spellings. Either way, it's in A or in U, M-E-D-I-D-E-S. Another name that we run into is Palantides, a soldier for Conan, sorely wounded at Valkia, the Valley of Valkia, where the famous battle is fought. But ransomed by his family. He owns a castle in the Atenes. Probably won't ever fight again because of his injuries. There's Publius, a chancellor. After the valley at Valkia, he fled the kingdom in disguise. So a little bit of a disgraceful parting. There's Tiberius, a lord, the lord of Amilius. He is a Conan loyalist. And there's the Countess Albiona, a Conan loyalist scheduled for execution, but rescued by Conan. She is a follower of Mitra. As I said, Mitra is really popular. If you don't come across at least one Mitra worshiper in a world, then you're not in Hyboria. There's Count Thespius, a Conan traitor who was tasked with managing the execution of Countess Albiona. Murillo, an aristocrat and briber, a sort of shifty man with friends in high and low places. He is, as far as I can tell, Aquilonian, but he may not be. Not very clear on where he's from. Another name, Athicus. He's just a guard. And I think the rest of the names that I have are actually pretty significant. So there's one guy named Ascalante, and he's a former nobleman of Aquilonia. He wanted to seize the throne. So he's, what, the third person now? Well, fourth if you count Conan. So he wants to seize the throne, and he maintains a hermit priest in the southern desert, which is south of Koth, who, should Ascalante die by stealth or by treachery, is sworn to break the seal and read a manuscript entrusted to him, which would cause a word to be whispered in Stygia and a wind to creep up from the south by midnight and kill whoever is responsible for killing Ascalante. I love that. It's one of those trigger items that he has cast upon himself, you know, upon my death by stealth or treachery, then this will happen. And it's just such a great idea and such a very Dungeons and Dragons kind of dead man switch. Speaking of magic, there's a witch in the valleys of Tarantia. Remember, Tarantia is the city, I think, towards the east end of Aquilonia. Her name is Zalata. She has a wolf familiar, which is pretty deadly if you cross it. She is a friend of Conan's, or she becomes a friend of Conan's, and becomes a trusted advisor to him. Last person of note in this general region is Zenobia. She is a beautiful concubine to the acting... I don't know if he's the acting king or if he's just sort of the chief under the acting king, but his name is Taraskus. Zenobia makes a big impression on Conan, though, and he names her as the sole ransom in a prisoner exchange program and claims that he intends to make her the queen of Aquilonia. We don't see that happen on screen or on page, but that's what he says he's going to do, and I don't have any reason to disbelieve him. Conan seems to be a man of his word. He likes pretty ladies. He seemed to get along with Zenobia well. So I do assume that after the book events are over, she becomes the rightful queen of Aquilonia. Now, what happens after that, we don't really have any data on. Conan's stories, as I've said, they don't really flow into one another. They're very much snapshots of some event within Conan's life. They're completely out of order, and very frequently similar events are mentioned, and you're not really sure if they're the one that you read about in that other book, or if it's a separate event entirely. It does get a little bit confusing. So we don't know how Aquilonia ends up, other than we do know that King Conan of Aquilonia regains it, sets Zenobia up as his queen, and Aquilonia presumably continues the good fight against all the chaos at the borders of civilization. Speaking of borders and civilization, I have another giveaway that you are free to take if you email me at klaatu@member.fsf.org. It's a pretty good collection of Dungeons & Dragons and or Pathfinder content. There are some great adventures. Depending on what I send you, it's a Humble Bundle code, so it may be one of two different packets that I have to give out, but depending on which one you get, you'll either get the one that I mentioned last week. I have another one of those with the Northlands saga, so playing in the wintry north, in fact. But there's also another earlier packet that I had gotten from the same company, Frog God, and there are a couple of different packets in there, a couple of different modules in there, one being Rogues in Rimbalo, which is set in their Borderland Provinces region of their Lost Land setting. This isn't a Conan setting, obviously. It's their own custom setting, but the adventure itself is city-based. So you are going through this Rimbalo town, dueling against a couple of different thief guilds and sneaking around and just in general being a rogue in Rimbalo. It's a really nice little adventure with a really good map, a lot to work with, a lot of fun. There's also a lot of content about their Borderlands provinces and just their big Lost Lands setting, lots to work with. And as is so much in Dungeons & Dragons, there's just a lot in there that really sounds and feels a lot like the Hyborian Age and Conan the Barbarian. So it's kind of fitting, I think. So yeah, email me if you want a copy of those. I have Humble Bundle codes to give out. A couple left, so shoot me an email, klaatu@member.fsf.org, and I will hook you up. Thank you very much for listening. Talk to you next time. that's it for this week's episode. Thank you very much for listening. My name is Klaatu. You can reach me via email at klaatu@member.fsf.org. You can also usually catch me in IRC as not Klaatu. I'm on the Freenode network. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll talk to you next time.